I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members and the Urban League of Portland, hosting the Equal Opportunity Dinner Celebration, honoring Black wealth, Black creators, and Black culture, with a special presentation to Rukaya Adams, Thursday, September 28th, at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. More information is available at ulpdx.org.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
Good to have you back. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Ginger Huizar and Byung Yu. Welcome. Hey, would each of you
Hello.
Good to hear your voice. Would each of you just start by telling us, telling our listeners what your current job is? And you can decide what order you want to go in.
All right. My name is Byung Yu. He, him pronouns. I identify as a bi-ethnic Korean, and I'm an ELD educator in Portland Public Schools at Atkinson Elementary School.
Great.
And I am a special education learning center teacher, also at Atkinson Elementary School.
Nice. Okay. Well, Atkinson is in the house tonight. And would you tell us a little bit about your journey? We always like to know how you all came to where you are now as far as being the educators that you are.
Like how we got involved with the union, or?
Or what inspired you to become a teacher, or.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So being involved with the union and being an organizer really started for me working at Rosa Parks Elementary and organizing to keep our year-round calendar when the district was fighting to close the program. And then, you know, once I got involved in the union from that point, it just kind of rolled into some more organizing and now being on the executive board here with Ginger. So.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say my journey to education isn't your typical one. I was a high school dropout. So I dropped out at 15. I was an Oregon student. And then as I became a young adult who was a single parent, I ended up going into education. Well, I went into nursing, and then my son had special needs, and I didn't know how to navigate supporting him because I didn't have the language or the understanding of special education laws. Mm-hmm. And as I was sitting at the table, I was like, oh, yeah, I need to know some things. So I started taking classes on children with disabilities in my nursing program, and then I moved into special education in the end. So that's how I became a teacher. Union work has come along really out of feeling like desperate post-COVID, and then as we entered COVID and then coming out of COVID, just feeling like special education is a sinking ship, and there's not really anybody that's there trying. Like we're taking the water out of the sinking ship with pails that have holes in them.
Well, we wanted to have you both on to talk about the community organizing work that Portland Association of Teachers has been doing. But first, why don't you talk about the things that teachers are asking for in the current contract bargain?
I'll go. We didn't talk about order. So I know a big thing that we are that a lot of educators are really adamant about is a cost of living increase, a pay raise. We know that Portland is the second least affordable city for teachers to live in. Teachers can't make it on the income that they have in this city. And we've seen recently a lot of unions, that's a big ask around their contract negotiations, and that's a big one around ours. As a special ed teacher, Article 9 has been a big issue that we've been in negotiations over for the past year with the district, because safety is a huge issue in our schools and in our classrooms and for our staff, especially in special education and in mental health services. So those are two things that I'm really passionate about. Seeing us come to the table and have some changes for the good for our staff.
We've also been organizing around having class size caps. Some of our class sizes in Portland Public Schools have gone a little beyond out of control. And we have a lot of educators that are going through burnout for a very, very long time, and teacher working conditions are student learning conditions. And so that's one thing that we're trying to put into our contract, as well as the temperatures in our classroom as well. We have a lot of old, outdated buildings in Portland Public Schools. And one thing that we're fighting for is making sure that our school buildings are at least 60 degrees to 90 degrees, which is still a huge range and still being denied at the bargaining table as well.
And aren't there some asks around building safety in terms of mold and rodents and asbestos and just basic fundamental building safety measures to keep things safer for kids? Full disclosure, I am a Portland teacher and I do have issues with these things. Also, another one I wanted to bring up is planning time, and that's been a really big key issue for a long time, is having the amount of time to do all the prep and supports for all that we need to do to support our students. So can you tell us what has been the response so far from the superintendent and district office? What's it been like at the bargaining table on the PPS side?
You hear these crickets in the room? That's been the response, pretty much. The response has been the district giving a lot of folks in the district headquarters raises and expanding on their communications team, and a lot of top-down things, whereas we're seeing a lot of day-to-day struggles in people that work with have student-facing positions that aren't being addressed. So I would say that the response has not gone very far, which is another reason why we've been tying into having community listening sessions and community organizing and building relationships with folks in the community as well, so our contract can reflect the asks of the folks impacted in our buildings.
Yeah, and I think I would add to that because the contract, the bargaining sessions have gone so slow over the past year leading up to this, that we are now currently working without a contract and with a frozen salary schedule. And they, they offered us a 2.5% cost of living adjustment. Our contract is already 2 years past due, and the new contract will be another 2 years. So 2.5% for the 4 years of work doesn't really seem like a feasible option at this point for people, given how much inflation has gone up. I think that There have been a lot, they've spent a lot of time in bargaining, arguing over logistics and hypotheticals around negotiations with Article 9, which is around special education and student safety. And at the end of that, what we've seen while they spend a year arguing over it is a flight of special education staff quitting. And like every special education support staff quit in my building this year. The OT, the speech path, the psychologist, they all quit at the end of last year. So people are, while they're arguing logistics at the bargaining table, people are making choices to show them that they aren't willing to wait it out, and they're leaving with their actions. We've seen a lot of unfilled special education positions. We've seen special ed classrooms close this past year because of the lack of safety. We've seen a lot of special ed program administrators have left, special education TOSAs have left. These are the people who are above the staff that support us. And if they're leaving, then we get new people that are not from the district, don't have historical understanding coming in, and it leaves all of us still feeling very unsupported while they're at the bargaining table arguing over what's best for kids when we have nobody to serve those kids.
So are they saying, oh, we're sorry, you know, we'd like to do more, but we just can't afford it now? Or are they saying it's not really an issue, or all of the above?
Go ahead, Ginger.
I would say it's all of the above. There's a lot of talk about the money, right? What mm-hmm. we can and cannot afford. At the same time, the district administration staff had a larger pay increase than what was offered to teachers.
Of course they did.
While we have had student-facing services cut and positions cut, they have had a staffing increase the past few years, right? So how we utilize our funds varies widely between what teachers think should be utilized and what our district administration is actually utilizing funds for and telling us they have. At the same time, the state did end up passing the largest education funding measures that they've ever passed before this past spring. The district said, oh, we don't think that's going to happen and we can't bank on that, but it happened. And there were a lot of special ed staff that went to Salem multiple times in order to support that action to happen. And then at the end of that, we want to make sure that while that has been funded, what we need to see is student-facing services actually get funded and not higher pay raises and increases to district administration or filling more district administration level positions, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what happens, right? Is that the funding, we get the funding, but then the district decides where that funding goes. So it's only half the battle to get the funding, right? Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. KBOO doesn't take corporate money for advertising, so we rely on you, our listeners, for sustaining us financially. Please go to kboo.fm/give to donate. Question, what organizing has happened so far to educate parents and the greater community about what's going on? And I'm also curious, how do you compete with the district office? Because, of course, they have every parent's email address and they can send out emails with all their propaganda whenever they want to.
Well, for community organizing, we've had community organizing listening sessions at multiple schools throughout the district last year. We have our community organizer working with PTAs and building a parent coalition. And then as well as I would say, you know, combating the money and the resources the district has would be the relationships we hold with our students and the parents in the building. When we're organizing with each other, I think that's the most important thing, right? And really hearing what the asks are from our community, rather than standing in front of our community, standing behind our community, is a really important thing. We don't want to model the same thing the district does and have a very top-down approach. We really, really want to have a bottom-up approach when we're organizing with folks. And that has been a lot of the focus.
I feel like there have been some events also, but I'm not recalling exactly what. Has there been a rally or something? Or
yeah, so on the special education side, we started the special ed steering committee within the union, and we held a couple of listening sessions, and we had a great turnout of all, because community organizing, it doesn't just mean one group. We want to see families, we want to see community members. We've seen special ed lawyers that didn't even have kids in this union or in this district coming in and just offering, like, hey, I want to be part of this. This is something that I do for a living. If you need help, I'm here. So that's really the premise of it. From there, we were able to then organize it with our teachers last fall that work in special education to hear how their contracts were being violated as a whole. And then file a grievance. And then we did a special ed week of action last November, I think it was. And that was where each day there was an action that led up in the end to what we did was a march on the boss. And many community members came out. And then we hand delivered our special education grievance to the district outside the building because they wouldn't let us in. And from there, this year, when school started, I was hearing and seeing, even in my own building, for the first time ever, admin were coming around and saying, hey, special ed staff, are you getting your 40 minutes of uninterrupted planning time? And I need to see it in your schedule. And are you getting both your planning time and your case management time? Which has never happened before. But through those organizing efforts, that was something that came out because it was a huge contract violation for so many special ed staff. And I know that it's still happening within our union, especially for newbies, because newbies don't know their rights yet. We are going to have some upcoming actions as well. We have a community art build that's going to be happening September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And that's modeled after LA Unified's community art build. And that's the big one that I hope people will come out to, because that's where we're going to make a lot of the visuals and the banners and the things that we're going to use then moving forward for the Bridge March and should we have to stand on a line.
Oh, the Bridge March.
Yes.
That sounds
fun. That'll be happening in October.
Okay. All right. Well, we will stay tuned for that.
Wait, before you go on, can I ask, were there also people at during the first week of school, community members that were passing out flyers and things? Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. Byung, do you want to speak to it? I don't want to take all the airtime.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we have folks going to different school communities and flyering about some of our upcoming actions and connecting with parents in the community. We also, like Ginger mentioned, the art build, but one action that I was going to mention is, you know, throughout the school year last year, attending those school board meetings, we've had a lot of educators, parents, community members showing up at our school board meetings, so much so that the school board meeting was so packed that we were at capacity and we had to watch some of the school board meeting out on the street or out in the parking lot. And in response, what has happened with the district, we have less opportunities to be at school board meetings now and less public comment, where we used to have public comment available twice a month. It's been changed to once a month. So you're seeing some of the district's responses when folks are speaking up and asking and telling what is needed in the community. The district is turning off opportunities to speak.
And to piggyback that, I also want to add, because that's exactly what's happening, is that they are shutting down our voices because our voices are so powerful within the community. So they have also not only moved listening our community's ability to speak at board meetings to once a month from twice a month, which it's historically been. They also have moved public comment for anyone that's not a student to the very end where it used to be at the very beginning of the board meetings. Now they've moved it to the very end because most people don't want to stick around until 11 o'clock to be able to speak to the issues that are happening within their community and advocate for that. But I do want to plug that you can, when you sign up, you can look at the agenda that is posted and you can ask to have your comment placed under an agenda item so that you don't have to wait until the end of the meeting to speak to public comment. And that's a way to have your, you know, get your voice in there a little bit sooner, because again, it's about how can they shut us down and not have all of these people coming out in mass amounts, because we've seen that sometimes public comment can last 2 hours because mm-hmm. people have a lot to say.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, it sounds like parents and community are getting fired up and are on board for support. There's one term I want to quickly ask you about. There's something that's called bargaining for the common good. And I imagine that many of our listeners may or may not be aware of that. Can you explain what that is? And I'm assuming that you have heard that term or used that term a little bit when you talk about the community organizing that you're doing in PAT.
Yeah, my understanding of bargaining for the common good is we're not just bargaining for like raises or things, bread and butter things in our contract, right? But when we put contract language in our contract, we're putting community pieces in there that impact all folks. Like, for example, I know UTLA has bargaining language for immigration fund to detract from ICE coming in, and that's bargaining for the common good. I know in our current contract, we've been working on trying to get the district to allocate spots where we could have affordable housing for students. That's bargaining for the common good. And I mean, really all this community building, right? It's just not working in isolation with us as PAT educators, but it's also working with our other union coalitions. And we've done a lot of union coalition building as well. Like, we've worked a lot with our paraeducators and PFSP. We've worked a lot with our custodians and nutritionists in SEIU 503 and so on. And so, yeah, and I'll let Ginger speak to that a little more if she wants to as well.
I mean, Byung hit on most all of it. It's a organizing strategy. I also think that it's leading up, it's actions leading up. It's not just the contractual wins, right? So we were able to get a grant for a PAT community organizing position to be funded, which has been tremendous just in the month that Joanne has been in that position to see. So, you know, we think if we do have to strike, we need to think about what we've seen during COVID, and I say this as a parent of three kids in PPS, is that schools are the hubs for our communities, and they house everything that to meet our children's needs. And if a school has to close, then people freak because they can't get to work. They don't have free childcare. They don't have the resources, the food boxes, the clothing, all of these pieces that some families are reliant upon. And so our community organizer has, in the lead up to whatever actions may have to happen for us, has been working with mutual aid groups and nonprofits and community organizing groups so that if something has to happen, and PTAs, we have information and resources available to help support everyone as best as we can, because we know that the impact to teachers having to go through something like a strike, if that was necessary, it's not just an impact on us, it's an impact on the whole city.
That's great. And do you have, well, I think we probably only have time for one question. So I'd like to hear from both of you quickly. How can listeners support educators in this fight? What's the best way for people to get involved?
I think, you know, like coming to our actions, like we have our build coming up. That's a huge thing. Connecting with your educators, at your local school is really important. A lot of us will be wearing blue on Tuesdays, showing that solidarity and showing up to your school community in blue, having your students wear blue, asking who the teacher reps are in your school communities, are all ways to get yourself connected and how to support actions. I know that you'll see sometimes in the news and the media, misinformation, I want to say, right? Like when there's been a lot of discussion on if teachers go on strike, how dare they do it during November and calling it No School November, like educators aren't out here working in November or having parent-teacher conferences and meeting with multiple parents. I think that's just really important, connecting with folks and building relationships with each other.
Yeah, that Blues Day is the big, like the easiest thing that anybody can do. Every Tuesday from now until whenever, you wear blue, and that's PAT's color. It's solidarity for your teachers and your community. And it speaks volumes just in being able to be present wearing blue. Often if I see an administrator wearing blue on Blues Day, I will say, oh, thanks for supporting teachers, because I see that solidarity happening right there. And if they didn't intentionally do it, then hopefully they do it the next week too. I think that, you know, PTAs right now are what's getting, or where we're seeing a lot of support happening. Thanks to our community organizer, and PTAs are a great opportunity for families to talk to the building organizer that's there. We call that a CAT organizer, and find out what's happening and get involved.
Well, thank you, Ginger and Byung, for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening